Mornings with Bucky and Aaron are brought to you by Bud Light.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world.
Austin, Texas, baby.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
P&E.
What's P&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
Rolling into the fourth quarter on a Monday, coming out of a busy weekend, recapping it, looking forward to a tremendous week, which includes the Longhorns back in action, the Cowboys back in action, the World Series. Before we start looking forward, we got to look back and recap the weekend that was, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But in the race at COTA, Max Verstappen, the Dutchman, the young gun, rises up, takes down, slays Lewis Hamilton, Buck, Sir Lewis Hamilton on his track. That's essentially his track, right? He's dominated that race.
Five times.
And Verstappen gets the win with Team Red Bull in front of 140,000 or so fans, and really, as the Blitzer said, over 300,000 fans for the weekend. And obviously a lot of them are repeat fans each day, but that's a big number. Big number of race fans. Our buddy Rodney Rodriguez was with us last hour from Red.
Yeah, I don't know how you do anything about the traffic, though, unless you widen the roads that come out of the Circuit of the Americas. And somebody's going to have to pay for that, and that's not going to be TxDOT. That's going to come from private, from people out of COTA themselves. Those little roads, you know.
They built it in Elroy.
Yes. You have to talk to the folks in Elroy about that, because they where do they go off onto? 71?
Yeah, I mean, 290. Well, look, they have the shuttles, but even the shuttles are going to have to sit in traffic, right? They can't hover above the traffic and fly in. Now, if you built some type of Walt Disney train or something from the airport that went right to the gate, I mean, that's cost billions of dollars. I don't know. A light rail system of some kind that hit COTA, I don't know, but that's down the road. First things first, if you're going to put 140,000 people anywhere, there's going to be a lot of traffic.
Absolutely.
There's really not much. I mean, you're not going to find an event that has that many people on one day.
Yeah, you're going to have to expect a long day.
You're going to deal with traffic. There's no way around that. You ever try to get in out of the Texas OU game at the Cotton Bowl when the fans are there on a Saturday and the fair is packed with people? Because they estimate that there's about 200, throughout the given day on the day of the Texas OU game, there's 200,000 people rolling through there, right? Between fairgoers and football fans. And that's a mess to get in and out of. It just is. You just kind of plan for it. What are you going to do?
Well, it's not going to be smooth, that's for sure.
It's going to require patience.
Right.
It's going to, and, you know, get on a shuttle, have some, you know, I don't know, relax. The bigger issue is going to be getting out, because everybody kind of gets there at different times during the course of a morning or into the day, right? But when it's over,
everybody wants out.
Everyone's ready to leave.
You got that right.
Yeah.
Everybody wants out, and they want out quick.
Yeah. And that's why they used to do the concert on Sunday night, right? They used to have the concert, and then people could hang and, you know, watch the celebration and the trophy presentation, and then kind of, you know, hang out and have some food and then get ready for the concert. Obviously, the Billy Joel show was Saturday night. But this says 400,000 people over the weekend. There we go. Nice.
Yeah, they'll find a way to keep this thing going. Bobby, he'll get into some private people, and also the state will figure out what they're going to do. You know, if it's making money for the area and hotels and things like that, then they'll keep it.
Well, of course it is. I mean, if this is going to be the busiest airport day ever,
right?
You know, the hotels were packed downtown, and it, you know,
rental car places, everything.
And we talk about Austin and the changing landscape and everything that's happening. I mean, just consider this month. I mean, you had, you know, two weekends of ACL Fest.
That's true.
With 80,000 people a day for, you know, six total days. And people from all over the world coming in to attend that, and then this, and gosh, it goes on and on. You had Moto Grand Prix to start the month out there at COTA. I mean, these are international events that bring people from all over. So here's a great picture on our text line from one of our listeners, our female listener. There they are, Buck. They're in their Max Verstappen gear. And look at that, three dudes behind her that have painted their chest orange with M-A-X, Max. I guess they like the Team Red Bull.
There you go.
Said so much fun. So much fun. Hope everybody had a great time. Rodney described the energy that he saw like nothing before.
I got to believe NASCAR will be back here in the spring at some
time.
They will.
Yep. NASCAR comes back for year two. They had a great first year, despite the rain, remember?
That's right.
Had to drive in the rain and actually had to shorten the race, if memory serves. But and Rodney even mentioned bringing the Indy cars back.
Mm-hmm.
And MotoGP, I mean, they need to try to get as many races. And it's a world-class facility, so it was cool to see that in the eyes of the world. We'll see what the TV ratings come down as. I'm sure they're huge because that race was compelling to the end, and it meant a lot with the points race with Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton.
Well, if they wanted to keep it coming back, they're going to have to – they will have to do something if the track keeps getting bumpier and bumpier. They're just not going to – those guys are going to put their – I don't know how much those cars cost, but they're not cheap. And they're not going to put that equipment on that track if it continues to buckle a little bit and get bumpy. At some places, it may be character to it, but here, there's a lot of track there.
Yes.
You know?
No question. And that becomes, you know, the track settles, and as Rodney talked about it, like a foundation on a house.
And it's not like hill country.
And I've always been told that that soil east of 35.
A little softer, a little mushier.
Softer. It's more caliche.
Yeah.
And, you know.
It's not that limestone, that hard, thick limestone.
Yes. When you build west, you got a little more solid mm-hmm. foundation. That's softer. And it's built into that, you know, those hillsides there, you know, east of the tollway, and it's going to buckle. And we had a freeze last year, a hard freeze, and you know, then blazing through the summer, that thing's going to shift and move, and it's not.
I'm going to get my almanac on that, ooh, on that side of town,
ooh,
figure that out a little bit,
ooh,
and report back.
I like it. All right, so that was the F1 weekend.
So it's easier to grow that weed on that side of the river too, by the way.
Well, I don't know. I just know I had a buddy of mine who's got a plumbing company. They were building all these houses, you know, out there by Coda and east, like even east of where I live in Onion Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'm going to be doing a lot of work up in there because the houses will settle and the plumbing pipes
there you go.
And all that stuff. He said, I'll be there a lot over the next year, 10 years or so. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, that freeze did not help that track. I guarantee you that.
No. But there we go there. We also had football from the weekend. We've talked about the college football shuffle. Georgia's still number one, unanimous number one. Cincinnati got a bit of a scare with Navy, but they're still number two.
And I saw something back in Alabama that tells me they're still pretty good watching them play.
Would you have them ahead of Oklahoma right now, even though they have a loss, which they are now, by the way, in the AP poll,
well,
number three?
I really can't do that. Oklahoma's earned every bit of that undefeatedness that they have because they've got out of some jams. They got out of one Saturday too. And that was a unbelievable move by that young quarterback to grab that ball and move forward. And I'm pretty sure he had no clue about any of the rules except for I gotta make a decision, a business decision here, and we need to get across that first down marker.
Yeah.
Because I myself didn't know it until they actually said it on the broadcast. I thought the play was stopped. It never got to the line of scrimmage. Someone said, well, it got that ball should not have been able to do that because it did not get to the line of scrimmage. That guy was stuffed before that.
Well, that's the
before
question.
Before the line of scrimmage.
Like, had he crossed the line of scrimmage
right,
and then
can't
pushed
do
back,
that.
He, you know, if you miss the play, Kansas is playing Oklahoma. Kansas is actually in the game. It's 28-23. Oklahoma's going to try to go for it on a fourth down play with 3.5 minutes to go in the ballgame, up 5 points. So, obviously, if Kansas gets a stop, they get the ball and a chance to go take the lead. And they stuff the running back. Caleb Williams gives the ball to the back. The back gets stuffed. And Caleb Williams runs backwards to him and grabs the ball out of his hand, essentially, and then carries the ball himself across for a first down. There was no debate about the first down. The question was it a forward lateral? If he had crossed the line and then got pushed back, that could become a penalty. It was not. There was also a question of was his, you know, should the whistle have blown because his
forward momentum
was stopped?
I thought more so than anything is that, but then when you go look at it, you're right. It was bang, bang.
It was really close. I mean, it's one of those, like, if
you waited another second, that whistle would have blown.
If Caleb Williams waited another half second, I think the whistle would have begun to be blown, but instead it was right as the official would have begun to blow the whistle. He ripped it out, and it happened so quickly.
And there's no way in the world that kid could tell you on a Monday that I knew the rules.
No, he was just instinctually making a play.
Right.
And it saved the Jayhawks. They went down and scored a touchdown to make it 35-23, and they win the ball game. But they struggled. They had no points in the first half and ended up having to score 35 in the second to get the victory. Kind of a wake-up call for the Sooners. Also had Iowa State beating Oklahoma State in a big game, 24-21. There was also an egregious penalty call there on a unsportsmanlike conduct call on a Iowa State touchdown to the receiver Hutchinson that they took off the board because of unsportsmanlike conduct. It was ridiculous, I believe. Terrible call. Shame on the Big 12 officials, but it didn't end up having an outcome, you know, pen the outcome of the game because Iowa State still won the ballgame. It was a good game, though. That was that 24-21 is, I think, what the Longhorns can expect the next couple of weeks. Those are going to be the kind of games they're going to be playing in. The Longhorns come out of their bye and play at Waco, at Ames. A couple of pretty good football teams that know what their identity is. They know what they're about.
And they know what you're about.
And they know what you're about.
Yep.
Good stuff there.
Yeah, I'm expecting the coach to win a game this week.
Well, this is our first time to see Sark's team out of a bye week, right? This is a first for this staff. You want to believe that this was a week to get better, self-scout, self-identify issues, and then fix them. A hard week of practice coming after probably a light week of practice last week to let some things heal up and get their legs freshened up a little bit. But you got to go hard this week, Buck, because Baylor also had a bye. And you know they're going to be a physical group.
Yeah, Randa's team went hard probably, especially on that defensive side. That's a hard-hitting group. They're not overly big. They're not overly big on the defensive line. But their linebackers come to play.
Well, they've got Terrell Bernard.
And they got a safety that comes to play, too.
Now, that defensive personnel is legit, and their defensive front is good. This becomes – and now they can really run the football. They have a quarterback, Bohannon, who we'll learn about. We'll hear Sark today at 11 o'clock talking about
– And Aranda's built on Matt Rhule's, you know, theory on defensive players. Give me some of the best players. Just give me some great athletes, and I'll find a place to stick them. Sort of like what Oklahoma State's doing, E. You know, they're just finding guys and sticking them in spots.
Yeah.
Good athletes. I'll find a place for you to play.
Yeah, so the college football week, interesting. Texas back in it. We've got a top 10 matchup coming this week with Michigan and Michigan State, which will be fun.
Yeah, what's Georgia and Florida going to be like?
Smash job.
Is it?
Until someone can move the football on Georgia, they haven't even been threatened yet, Buck. Their point differential is ridiculous.
Yeah, they're going to be coming after Florida.
And Florida's defense isn't good. And, you know, gosh, what did LSU hung 49 on them the week Les Miles was being bought out. So I'm not a big buyer in Florida right now. I am a buyer in Georgia. They seem to have no peer right now in college football because, you know, Cincinnati, Bama, Ohio State seems to be getting better.
Mm-hmm.
And I know in the that state up north of Ohio, Michigan, they're a little bit bummed out and not real happy that Ohio State is ranked ahead of both Michigan and Michigan State.
Well, you get your chance.
Yeah, you get. I do think the winner of the Michigan-Michigan State game this week will leapfrog Ohio State no matter what the Buckeyes do against Penn State.
Even if it's Michigan State, you think they'll move in front of them?
I would hope.
Either one?
I would hope. I mean, the one question for Michigan State is they don't have a top 10 caliber win. Neither does Ohio State, by the way. And it looked like Ohio State was going to get a top 10 matchup this week, but Penn State went ahead and lost in 9 overtimes to Illinois. So
9 overtimes.
I mean, this was setting up like the biggest weekend in the Big Ten of the year because you were going to have Michigan, Michigan State, and then Ohio State, Penn State. Both, had Penn State been able to beat Illinois, would have been top 10 matchups. Instead, you'll have just one because Penn State tumbled. But Michigan, Michigan State, huge game in college football this week. Aggies climb up to 14, and they're figuring their offense out, Buck.
That they are. They're figuring out their run game for sure. They got two runners that can get after you.
And props to...
And I don't know which one I like better now that I look at them.
And props to Jeff Traylor and the UTSA Roadrunners, now ranked in the top 25 at 23.
I was told there's a good possibility in 2 weeks there's not these great games in 2 weeks, and the Roadrunners playing El Paso.
UTEP.
Could be... Game day, college game day there. Is that possible?
Is that possible? We'll see. We'll see.
Zay, is that possible? Because I think the game is away. I mean, have they ever been there? I don't think they've ever been to UTEP. I mean, is that possible they would take college game day? There's got to be a better game somewhere here. Somewhere.
Lee Corso is not going to El Paso.
Come on, man. El Paso's a nice town.
I'm worried for Lee Corso, by the way.
Are you? Each and every week you're getting more worried about him?
Yeah. I'm worried about him because I know he's dealing with some stuff. And during the broadcast this week, like while talking, they were, where were they at? UCLA this week for the UCLA Oregon game.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk Herbstreit's next to him, and he says, and he was trying to
cut. What do you call him, Johnny?
No, he's trying to talk about the kicker at UCLA, and he kind of whispers to Kirk Herbstreit, like, no one will hear this. What's his name? And Kirk said, Kirk Herbstreit had to like say his name. And I'm like, Lee, you're on TV. You can't just like whisper like no one's going to hear this. What's his name, Kirk?
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. God love him.
He's your son-in-law, Lee. Come on.
Yes, he's your son-in-law, the coach.
Come on, coach.
But I'm assuming, I got to look at the TV networks, but I'm assuming ESPN College Game Day will be at the Michigan-Michigan State game, right? Or that can be a Fox deal.
This week?
That might be Fox because it's a Big Ten game, but I have to look and see where everybody's going this week.
Well, we know where we're going, 11 a.m.
Yeah, because it's the morning horns.
That's right, lunch, brunch with the horns.
Brunch with the horns again.
Yes.
The 11 a.m. Longhorns with another kegs and eggs special, five in a row now. Five in a
row.
So I'm looking this up. So UTEP is in what conference? Conference USA? What's UTEP's record? UTEP is 5-0 too.
They are?
Is that right? UTEP's undefeated? I know UTSA is undefeated.
UTEP's get 3-0, 4-0.
Yeah, there's UTSA.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe so.
Maybe they go there, yes.
Maybe
so. Awesome.
Roadrunners. Well, what about SMU Cincinnati is building in a couple of, that's November 20th. SMU Cincy could end up being an undefeated battle as well late in the season.
Yeah, I would expect that one to be.
And
that's in Dallas too.
And I will put out the note. I am efforting to get on our program this week, hopefully Jeff Traylor and possibly Sonny Dyke. So
cool.
Undefeated teams from the I-35 corridor here, which we're excited about. Also, the Baylor Bears are along that corridor. Can they finish the construction in Waco anytime, by the way, having had to drive through that?
It's still a little bit of a pain.
It's right there at the stadium. So if you're going to the football game on Saturday in Waco, plan accordingly because it bogs down right there at McLean Stadium in downtown Waco.
Yeah, and for the Longhorns, you're still right in the thick of things. You need this game and you need the next game. You need to beat Iowa State, and you're still right there. You're right where you want to be. You've got to win those games. You've got to find ways in the fourth quarter. Or not, you'll be going down to your local Alamo Bowl again.
Somebody asked, did Clemson win? No, they did not.
No, Pittsburgh put it on them.
Pittsburgh beat the tail out of Clemson.
Yes, they did. And their quarterback is going to be in the Heisman race, too.
What's his name, Billy? Billy Pickett?
Pickett.
He's good.
He is good.
Pittsburgh is all of a sudden good, and Clemson is... Is it interesting that Clemson, you know, I've always felt like, and he's admitted this, Dabo Swinney has tried to build the Clemson program like Mack Brown built Texas, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the family culture. But isn't it funny how Mack Brown, you know, built the program and had a run of success that was unmatched with Vince Young to Colt McCoy, and then Garrett Gilbert was supposed to be the next guy, right? And you're thinking, oh my gosh, they're just going to keep on rolling. So you had Vince, championship, Colt. Almost. I mean, he played 4-1, and if he hadn't gotten hurt, you know, let's not talk about what happened if Colt never got hurt in the 09 championship game against Alabama.
Well, that's what they had in Clemson with Watson. And
that's right. So here's Dabo Swinney, and all of a sudden you've got, you know, Deshaun Watson right into Trevor Lawrence,
yeah.
All the success, all the dominance, and you thought, here comes DJ Uiagalelei, and he's just going to take this thing and run, and he's the next guy, and it's kind of going the way of Garrett Gilbert right now. He got benched, by the way, on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the players around him, that's not the same Clemson group, often, and especially on the defensive front. They don't do anything that inspires anybody defensively.
And what crept in for Mack, right? Was the complacency, the program became, entitlement became a problem?
I just think it's hard to do that every year. You'd rather be on that end that Clemson was on than the other way.
No question. But this is what spins it back to what Nick Saban has done in Alabama, the ability to keep the edge, to convince, because again, you got...
He's Nick freaking Saban.
Right, and it's really difficult. I think Dabo Swinney's running into that complacency thing where players, you know, they're five-star kids who get recruited by Clemson, they show up and think, well, I'm a Clemson now, we just win.
Right.
Well, there's a lot that goes into winning.
You're absolutely right.
It doesn't just happen. It's a built thing. And if you lose that edge and you allow it to become complacent and the C word, or as Nick Saban would call it, the rat poison, to sneak into your program, it can erode the program. And, you know, we'll see with Clemson big picture if it's just one bad year or this is a bigger problem for Dabo Swinney. But they have fallen hard and they have fallen fast. I mean, they went from dominant with Trevor Lawrence and playing for a national championship to they can't even beat Pittsburgh.
How long ago it's been since that group lost three games in a season?
Well, look, think about it. On Saturday was the first time they'd been an underdog in an ACC game since 2016, and they end up losing the game. And that's how quickly it can slip. But typically, as we saw with Mack, it didn't just happen. It didn't happen overnight. It was an accumulation of complacency and some bad recruiting misses and those things.
Some guys you thought were five stars were actually threes.
Yeah,
and kept on playing like threes.
Well, is it one bad year at Clemson? Is there a bounce back there? But they have faded quickly, And then
it takes a lot to stay up in that higher echelon where you only lose one game a year. It's hard to winning is hard.
Winning is hard, and that's why
I've heard that before.
Ask LSU.
Ooh.
You know, ask Ohio State has maintained a level of success through multiple coaches now. I mean, you could argue Bob Stoops in Oklahoma now with Lincoln Riley, they've maintained, but you know, Oklahoma not on that national.
By the way, I got
level.
To listen to Coach Stoops on their broadcast,
and
I'm not buying.
You're not a fan of Stoopy?
No, I like Stoopsie? To see him. I'd rather see him coach on the sideline and get back
on the
in
Fox
that game.
Broadcast,
yeah.
All right. All right, well, there's some college football chatter on top of the race. We'll come back, hit the NFL good, bad, and ugly from the weekend. Also get you ready for Monday Night Football tonight. And, yes, game one of the World Series. It's World Series week down in Houston. Astros are back in, third time in 5 years. They'll play the former rivals from the National League, the Atlanta Braves, who are into their first World Series, gosh, since 1999. That's hard to believe. They were in it almost every year for so long.
Texas A&M's tight end must have thought it was tight end's day on Saturday. He got into the act with two.
Windemeyer.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was National Tight Ends Weekend. Yesterday was National Tight End Day, so we've had some fun.
He got into it.
He did.
On Saturday.
He's one of the best in the country. We'll be back, B&E, with you, live, local, and digital, streaming always on that Horn app, your smart speaker, and at hornfm.com.
Cannon.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Hope for a great weekend. We're recapping with you the good, the bad, and the ugly. College football, pro football of note, as we've said, Tom Brady over 600 touchdown passes now.
And Zay would not take less than $100,000 from Brady for that ball. That is just really ridiculous.
A little greedy, but it is what
greedy.
It's worth.
And that's greedy. That's
Mike
being
Evans
greedy.
Handed it to him, so that's now finders, keepers, losers, weepers, my friend. It has now been gifted to me.
50 Gs, two helmets, two jerseys.
Nope.
I mean, I wouldn't even take, first of all, I wouldn't take money. No.
Assert that ball is worth $500,000. $500,000. Six
that
figures,
ball?
Easy. Yes.
And as time goes on, it'll be worth even more. You know, it'll get up to $1 million.
Oh, yeah. It's Tom Brady. It's the GOAT's 600 touchdown pass.
That guy could go galooly on you.
That could become a family heirloom that's worth a fortune.
Yeah, little baby Brady's want that ball, right?
Sell it and put it into crypto or something. You know what I mean?
Y'all are trying to give homie just $1,000 and maybe some coupons. And
I was not giving him coupons. I was giving him jerseys.
Hey, go
two
over
jerseys.
Mighty Fine and get one of those donut burgers.
I was going to give him $50 in Mighty Fines for the donut burger, the Round Rock donut burger, and the shake, and two helmets and two jerseys. That should have been enough for that guy. He gave that ball to. He just gave it to him. Just some fan. You know what the fan took? Two balls, and that was it.
He's regretting that this morning.
You think he's regretting
no
that?
No question. Now that he's hearing and listening and reading.
You know how greedy you would be? Somebody would tell you if you took that
greedy?
Ball. Yes.
What do you mean? He handed you the ball. The Aggie gave you the ball.
Well, first of all, what is that Aggie doing giving up Brady's ball?
That's a good question.
He should know. First of all, he should know better than that.
Very
I don't think they've
question.
Said it a number of times during the course of the week. Touchdown ball, 600. It's going to the Hall of Fame, and every ball after that goes into the Hall of Fame. So all you knuckleheads that think you can throw it in the stands or give it to your baby mama up there, you can't do that. Those are Tom Brady's balls. That's the GOAT.
Leave Tom Brady's balls alone.
That's right. If you want them, Tom Brady will get you one right out of the basket. The trainer will give you a ball.
Balls is funny.
The equipment guy will give you a ball or a jersey. I'd have liked two jerseys, and I would have said, that's great. Here's your ball back, Mr. Brady. Take it back.
Oh,
I would have gone Romo. How about a night with Giselle? Where is that at? Seriously? Come on, Romo.
Yeah, Romo decided that night with Giselle. He was pimping out Brady's wife
how about
on
that?
The broadcast at CBS. Do we have that, Zay? Ooh. Give me Romo. It was a miracle.
Sure, Jim Nance didn't
great
buy
negotiations
it.
In NFL history.
Right here. He's like, we need that ball. That's 600. What? Really? So what do you want? A million? No.
Oh, no,
a day
this,
with Giselle. A day with Giselle, and I'm in. Tom, okay, Tom will do it. He'll allow it. One time, you got it.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
No, I don't think Tom's going to allow that at all.
No.
Neither is Giselle there, Romo.
No. All right, so that's out there. Speaking of balls, I did watch. It reminded me of a very funny skit. I watched Saturday Night Live on Saturday night. Or actually, we recorded it and watched it. Jason Sudeikis is very funny.
Was he on?
So a lot of times the new run of Saturday Night Lives are not funny. This it's very funny. There were several skits that were, for the first time I can remember in a while, laugh out loud funny. Jason Sudeikis, who of course plays Ted Lasso, on the hit Netflix or Apple series is very, very funny. He was the host. Of course, he was a part of that cast for a decade and plus. He did a great job. Very, very funny. Also, Buck, I'm just going to say this. The most interesting team to me now moving forward.
Besides the Cowboys?
Well, of course, because I'm going to have to walk to Dallas potentially. The Cowboys are very interesting. But the most surprising team becomes the most interesting team to me, and that is in the AFC Conference, the Cincinnati Bengals, who they were went into Baltimore as a touchdown underdog and smacked the Ravens around. Like physically, like Joe Burrow was tremendous. The defense against Lamar Jackson, outstanding. Gosh, if not for an all-time phenomenal catch from Marquise Hollywood-Brown to keep his feet in on a touchdown pass, Lamar Jackson would have gone without a touchdown pass in that game. They did a great job on both sides. And think about this for the Bengals, why they're interesting. They're 5-2. Their two losses were in overtime, one to the Vikings, one to the Packers. The Vikings game was week one in a game that I think Joe Burrow would like to have back. You could see he was still trying to get through some of that preseason rust and didn't play his best game. They end up losing that game. Cincinnati is a good football team, Buck. I mean, they're 5-2. We now have 2 months of football to have evidence that Cincy's good. They're legit. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase is having a record-setting rookie year. Remember when the draft came around and the question was, are they going to take Chase or the tackle? And the idea was reunite Joe Burrow with his college teammate, Ja'Marr Chase. Well, Ja'Marr Chase had over 200 receiving yards yesterday in that football game. They've got T. Higgins, the former Clemson receiver. They've got C.J. Uzoma, the tight end. They've got Joe Mixon. And they're playing much better on defense. So all of a sudden, they are a factor in the AFC. When was the last time we could say that with the Bengals? And Joe Burrow, we know what a competitor he is. He's a really good player.
Yeah, I didn't think Chase was a catch and run kind of guy like he is. And he got just whipped through those tackles and just took off. He's got great speed.
Yeah, that long 80-yard touchdown run. He looked like Lamar Jackson cutting through people and breaking tackles.
Yeah, he's got great speed too.
Yeah, he runs away from people. I got to get you the Ja'Marr Chase number, how good he is as far as a rookie. But to me, they're very interesting because the Chiefs are all of a sudden sloppy, turnover prone, and not very good. I mean, is it time now with 2 months of football as evidence to say the Chiefs just aren't good? Like, I mean, we keep waiting for them to get on this run. But
they were getting away with it before with Patrick Mahomes and Patrick throwing passes there. I mean, and getting the ball down the field. Now he's dumping it off and throwing picks and fumbles, and they're hitting him hard too. He's taking some hits over the last couple of weeks.
So Patrick Mahomes, that was his first career game without 250 passing yards or a passing touchdown. They scored 3 points. So, and the defense we know is leaky, and they're turnover prone. They're just not very good. And in that division, the Raiders are all, it's almost like Derek Carr has become Patrick Mahomes, and Patrick Mahomes has turned into Derek Carr.
An old bet US and I had the over in that, and that thing was up in the 20. I'm like, oh, Patrick Mahomes is going to score at least 2 touchdowns here.
Oh, no. 20, 30 points, not going to get there.
No.
Also, here it is on Ja'Marr Chase. He becomes the second youngest player in NFL history with a 200-yard receiving game. And he has the most receiving yards through a player's first 7 games in NFL history by a lot. Mm-hmm. He's got 754 receiving yards in his first 7 games. And all of a sudden, the Bengals are explosive with he and T. Higgins and the rest of the cast of characters we mentioned. That's a team to watch. So the AFC is interesting. Buffalo, we start doing power rankings. Buffalo, probably still the best team in the AFC, but Tennessee just beat them. So maybe it's the Titans, Ravens, Bengals, Chargers? I don't know. Over in the NFC, it's all about the Cowboys, but it's really all about the Arizona Cardinals. It's 7-0. They have a win over Tennessee. They have a win over the LA Rams, who are also a one-loss team. Buccaneers.
I just like the way the Titans outsmarted some of that. I mean, that Derrick Henry jump pass was cool.
That was a sweet play. And he had two options. He threw it to the tight end, but he could have thrown it to Ryan Tannehill.
Tannehill was uncovered
in the flat.
Uncovered. Nobody covered him.
Well, that
he just went out there and lined up, and nobody said, well, it's not going that way. As soon as he took that drop step, they all came to the line of scrimmage.
Well, the Titans are interesting in that, of course, they were in the AFC Championship team game a year ago and lost to Kansas City. Kansas City went on to the Super Bowl.
By the way, Tannehill gets better as the year goes on.
Well, and remember, Arthur Smith, who left Tennessee to take the head coaching job with the Atlanta Falcons, they're breaking in a new offensive coordinator in Tennessee.
That's right.
So, slow start, maybe to be expected with a new OC and new receiver like Julio Jones, and they've also battled injuries. But it's hard to believe that team in Tennessee that beat Buffalo and Kansas City.
Yeah, the three biggest receivers in the world.
I know, but it's hard to believe that team lost to the Jets. But they did play the Jets without Julio Jones and A.J. Brown,
right,
who were both out.
When A.J. Brown lines up with Julio Jones, it looks like there's three Derrick Henrys on the field at one time. Like, the receivers look like Derrick Henry.
They're a big,
physical, strong, physical guys, yeah.
And they all are. So they're impressive. Cowboys didn't play, but as we said, they're now 5-1. And the rest of the division is 2-5. Everybody in the division.
It's going to be interesting to see how they come off this bye week, how they look, the Cowboys.
They play primetime, Vikings. Yeah, Vikings this week.
Well, okay, I'll chalk that up to a win.
Yeah, they should shred that defense. But the Vikings are off a bye, too. So we'll see Mike Zimmer's
is Gallup
team.
Coming back now?
We'll get updates this today from Mike McCarthy on what the – Lael Collins will be back for sure. Michael Gallup could be coming back. We'll get an update on the injury situation with the Cowboys now that they get to game week coming off the bye. That's interesting. And how about this, Buck? Thursday night, what a week. We've got World Series, and then Thursday night to start week 8 in the NFL, Packers hosting Arizona. How about Kyler Murray at Lambeau Field? That's a doozy.
That is going over.
That's a football game.
Yes.
That's huge in the NFC conference. I mean,
if Kyler Murray can walk, he took some big hits yesterday.
Yeah, Texans hit him, but they still scored 31 and won 31-5. Oh, can I give you a note on the Texans Cardinals game? That's the first time ever that an NFL football game has ended by the score of 31-5.
Yep, ever.
Ever. It's a unique score. How about that? First time ever.
Only with the Texans.
And that is the 1,086th unique score in the history of the NFL.
How about that?
First time ever. Unique score. 31-5.
I'll give it to the Texans. They don't quit. They don't quit on defense.
But they stink.
But their head coach, his word to his offensive group, it doesn't work. Whatever he says to them every week about being boneheads and legal procedures and holding penalties and bad mistakes on offense, it doesn't work.
They must
look at him and go, really? First-year coach? Seriously?
David Culley is the rah-rah everybody's friend guy thing, person.
Hey, listen, everybody's friend. This isn't working.
And I will say that the L.A. Rams are 6-1, too. But remember, Cardinals, how about this for Arizona? They've already beaten the Rams. They won at Tennessee. And now they get to go to Green Bay. That is a litmus test game. Short week at Lambeau to take on Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers and company. And, people aren't really paying attention to the Packers, but they're 6-1, and they're sitting atop a bad division, too, right? Like the Cowboys are sitting atop a bad division. Minnesota, Chicago, and Detroit, they're going to – this is one of those – if you're Arizona, this is one of those games that you'll look back on 2 months from now when it's time for home field advantage, who gets a bye week, who hosts a big playoff game. That's that kind of game because
– Detroit's going to get some wins because their coach doesn't care. Dan Campbell doesn't care. He's going for it on first down, fake punts, fake double kickoff reverses and stuff. Like, he doesn't care now, right? His team is out of it. Now he's going to just coach and Sandlot coach it up, too.
Coach it up.
Those are great calls on those fake punts.
Yeah. Well, they faked two of them. The Lions
don't you ever wonder why they don't fake? There's not that many fake punts in the NFL. When a guy gets ready to kick it, guys turn their back and start running the other way, and you need like 6 yards. Some of those guys are good enough athletes to run for 6 yards around a corner.
No question.
Get a guy pinned in.
No question. They went for it.
Twice.
In Detroit. They had two fake punts, an onside kick against the Rams trying to steal possession.
I don't even know how they got that onside. I don't even know how that happened on that onside
kick.
And
they still lost by 8 or 9 points.
Yes.
We'll be back, B&E, with you. We will wrap things up and hopefully talk to our buddy Jake Spavital, head football coach at Texas State University. Get our Bud Light Texas State snapshot. It's coming back. B&E on the horn.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Quick note on a Monday, that game Thursday night, Arizona-Green Bay is in Arizona.
Ooh.
My bad, not at Lambeau Field. So we'll start looking forward to that. Also, the World Series, Monday Night Football tonight, Saints Seahawks to wrap up Week 7 in the NFL. But it is time, Buck, as we wrap up our fourth quarter, finishing strong, as we always like to do. And we go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. He is the head football coach at Texas State. They had a hard-fought loss at Georgia State this Saturday, 28-16 final. Another second half that did not go their way. He is Jake Spavital. Jake, good morning.
Good morning. How you guys doing today?
Doing fantastic, Jake. And your group is getting closer and closer and closer. And That was a salty group that you played, especially at their home place. They play pretty good defense at home.
Yeah, you know, that was kind of what dictated the play, like, the entire game was I believe that they won the trenches. You know, I thought they were very physical up front. And you know, like, just the plays that, like, should hit for some pretty good runs, you know, that 4, 5, 6 yard gains were hit for no gains at all. And, you know, and vice versa on the defense. When we were on defense, you know, we'd be in position for really a no gain, and they'd end up, you know, fighting their way for about a 4, 5, 6 yard gain as well. You know, I thought Georgia State was very scrappy. You know, I think our kids play extremely hard, but, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, we got to do more than that. We got to execute better. We had a lot of missed tackles. We had a lot of drop balls. It's just really the inconsistency, you know. Like, I was kind of laughing because you guys were talking about finishing strong on your radio show right now, and where we're not doing a good job at is finishing strong as a football team, especially when we get into that fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, it's 7-0 this time and just 3 second-half points. Brady McBride, your quarterback, did all he could. I mean, he was your leading passer, obviously, but rusher as well, with his feet, trying to create some rushing yards. How would you analyze his performance and, you know, his further development as your leader?
Yeah, you know, you look at, like, the reason why he had, you know, more rushing yards than everybody because he was scrambling like crazy. We were literally in, we had 15 negative plays on offense on run plays, just, you know, just getting about negative, like, -1 yard runs. That's where they dominated the trenches, you know, and majority of our third downs, we were in long situations, and what we had to do better, especially versus that team, and we've been better in the past, is like our efficiency on our first and second down calls and try not to be in those long situations on third downs. And Brady's doing a decent job at it. You know, he still has his moments, you know, but, like, at the end of the day, like, we were having trouble protecting, and he was running, you know, and competing and using his feet as best he can. But, you know, at the end of the day, we got to be more consistent in what we do because, you know, everything kind of turns into a scramble drill, and it just doesn't look like it's clean football right now.
Jake, late in the season, as we get into the latter part of football season, these fourth quarters are starting to get to everybody. You know, you start to wear out and you start to wear down. And teams, you know, when you start to get tired, you start to get away from your technique and the things that you've been taught straight through the season. And the coach, everybody looks for the coach to make plays, but the coach a lot of times just – every time doesn't actually get a chance to go out there and make a tackle. When you're in position, that's the part of late in the season when you're tired and you're fatigued, you start to give in to some really bad habits. And I watch the Longhorns play, and I like watch a lot of kids that, you know, early in the season they got their heads up on tackles, they're making the plays, they're making getting teams for losses. But late in the season their head starts to duck, they started to get fatigued, they get outside of the box. And they start doing the things that they want to do. That's tough. That's tough coaching right there. The fatigue part of it. You just got to. That's where you really have to bear down. It's the games aren't 2 quarters and 3 quarters. They're 4 quarters.
No, you're 100% right. You know, and then you've been through it. You've seen it. You know how it is. Like, you know, like it's frustrating from a coaching standpoint at times. You know, and you know, like, it's a fourth down of one, and you have them for a 4 yard loss in the backfield, and we missed 2-3 tackles, and then they get a first down, and it happened multiple times on third downs. And you know, they're in the right position. You know, it's just like the fatigue maybe gets to them. But you know, like we talk about it in our team meeting. You know, like, our kids understand exactly where they stand. You know, like, right now it's just like we're playing as hard as we can, and I always have a respect, and I get a lot of compliments on how hard our team plays, but we've got to be more consistent in making those plays. Like, that's what it comes down to. We got to do more, and we're in position and we're doing the right things. We got to make that catch. We got to make that block. We got to make that tackle, and we got to do it more consistently. They do it at times, don't get me wrong, but, like, it seems like when we're in critical moments, and especially getting in the fourth quarter, it's either a fatigue or, you know, a lack of technique. That needs to just be addressed more clearly, and that's what we're going to approach this week, is making sure that, like, we're doing the proper technique, and when we're in those positions, we got to make those plays.
Yeah, it's been an ongoing conversation, Jake, here and down at the 40. I mean, it's critical to play your best in the critical moments of a football game, because it's going to decide the outcomes week in, week out. Quirk of the schedule here, Jake, that this week you play the team the Longhorns played week one, Louisiana, and Texas plays the team you played in Baylor. As far as the schedule falls, obviously we know how good Louisiana is, the Raging Cajuns. You're going there, and Baylor for the Longhorns. Give us your report on both.
Yeah, you know, honestly, on defense, both of them, they come from the same tree. So they're going to be running the same defense. They're going to be kind of a two-high shell with the bracket stuff. And I call it mini coverage, where they're really going to have double teams across the board, and there's going to be one-on-one matchup. And they're going to fill those safeties late into the run fits. And, you know, they're going to sprinkle in some blitzes and play some cover three. But, you know, I think both of them are talented teams, you know, like obviously, you know, the one loss of Louisiana comes from Texas, and, you know, Baylor's been still playing at a very high level right now. But I think they're both defensive teams, and they're both ball control teams. Both teams are going to try to establish a run. You know, Louisiana Lafayette had a 10.5-minute drive versus Arkansas State to close the game out last Thursday. You know, and you look at Baylor, and Baylor has been doing a pretty good job at, you know, controlling the ball and being efficient with their first down call. So they're two very, very similar teams. They come from very similar backgrounds. I know both of their coaches meet in the off season, and they talk a lot, you know, just about game management and just how to play defense and everything. So I think they're two quality teams. It's going to be two great, games that are going to be played this weekend, which, you know, again, college football, man, it's been really fun to watch over the past few weeks, you know, and, you know, anything can happen. So I think it's going to be pretty fun to watch these two games this weekend.
You know, Jake, when you're a running team and you feel like you're a physical team for four quarters, whether it works or not, you generally stay the path. And that's what you see late in football games and late in the season. Guys don't start getting cute with the passing game when they're a running team. They lean on it early, and they still lean on it late.
Yeah, no, I think that's how you win games. You got to run the football to win games, and I think there's just so much that goes into it. It keeps the defense off the field. It kind of shortens the amount of the game time, and you know, there's so many positives to it. But you know, like, that's how I've been approaching it this year. But like, you go into a game like Georgia State, you couldn't establish a run; you had to throw it, and then, you know, you get too cute with it, like you just said, you know, and that's the emphasis. Like, I think both teams, you know, Texas and Texas State, like, you have to establish the run, you know, to be able to compete with these guys, you know, and then because they're going to try to keep everything in front of them on the defensive side. So you've got to be able to run the ball efficiently and get those safeties down the box so you can have some one-on-one matchups so that the pass game could be more efficient when you do throw the ball.
Coach, appreciate it as always. Look forward to the 11 a.m. kick at Cajun Field in Lafayette, Louisiana on Saturday. We'll talk about it next Monday. Best of luck, and hope it goes well.
Have a great week, Jake.
Yeah, appreciate you guys as always. Thank you.
Thanks, Jake. Jake Spavital, head coach at Texas State. That is quirky that Texas plays Baylor, who Texas State played week one. Now, and then they play Louisiana, who the Longhorns beat week one. That's their only loss. Both at 11 a.m. this Saturday. All right, we're done. We're getting a little late here. We're going to hand it off to the Light the Tower guys. Jeff,
we took it four quarters. That's what happened.
We went
now,
four
Zay.
Quarters.